Hello and welcome to a very special Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. My name is Art. I'm your host and narrator today. But today we won't have a story, but we're going to have a wonderful conversation with the folks from Roving Rogue Productions. They are a theatrical troupe that is focused on creating traditional and non-traditional performances and experiences in physical and virtual spaces, according to their Instagram. So check them out for sure. But this fall, November, they are starting a new podcast drama called Simply to Die For. And CJ, the writer and an actor from the show, Joe, they came on the show to be interviewed and talk about their new production coming out. So we cover all kinds of things in our interview. And I just had a blast talking with those two, talking about audio drama, which is, I am pleased to say, is a format that is coming back thanks to the popularity of podcasts. Now, what's special about this show is that I am actually doing a video version of this. I'm going to try it out and see. And CJ and Joe were more than willing to be the guinea pigs here to let me use the video version on my YouTube page as well as the audio for my podcast. So I really appreciate that. And we'll see how this turns out. When I was a kid, my dad would play for us what we called old time radio. And I grew up listening to comedians like Jack Benny, George Burns and Gracie Allen, people like that. And then, but also the weekly radio dramas like The Shadow and Mystery Theater or something like that. I can't remember the exact title. Suspense. That was a great one. Stories that just kept me on the edge of my seat. And every week it would be a new story or part of a new overall story that I just loved. And even today, I have found some radio dramas that I love. One I want to give a shout out to, and it is it's called The Way We Haunt Now, and it's written and directed by Courtney Floyd. She's one of the co-hosts of Victorian Scribblers, a podcast about 19th century writers, and that's one that I'll give you all that information in the show notes. But I'd love for you to check out those two podcasts. Her story, The Way We Haunt Now, is wonderful. They just did their first season last year. She's getting ready for season two and is trying to get some financial support for that and finding her listeners. I think they've just been nominated for a couple of podcast awards. So you really want to check them out as well. So that's The Way We Haunt Now. With that's all I really have today by way of introduction. I'll be back at the end of the video just to wrap some things up and say farewell. So please enjoy the interview with CJ Coral and Joe Morales. Welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey podcast. Today, I have a couple of guests on our show to talk about a new program coming up. When a tree falls over at the annual day gala, friends, enemies, and lovers are all locked in a house together. Unfortunately, things take a turn when people start showing up dead. Guests, staff, and entertainment stumble through the night, attempting to avoid accusation and being the next one dead. But will they survive the night? And I'm not talking about my family reunion. I'm talking about the new 10-part radio murder mystery podcast extravaganza called Simply to Die For. It takes inspiration from old radio dramas, locked box mysteries, and a whole lot of melodrama. This show has been described as campy, funny, a little silly, touching, and rather poignant at times. Roving Rogues is hoping to tell a fun story with acknowledgments of the world we live in and highlighting the amazing writers, performers, directors, and recording artists that exist in Ohio. So now that brings me to my guests today. I have two special guests today. The writer of the show is CJ Coral. She is an Ohio-based writer focusing on mysteries and romance. Simply to Die For is her first audio drama, and she's currently working on way too many other projects, including more audio dramas and full-length novels and novellas. CJ, welcome to the Bookshelf Odyssey.
Thank you.
Good to have you on. Now my second guest is actor Joe Morales. He is an Ohio-based actor who's been in quite a few indie productions, including a feature-length film called A Story Worth Living, which has been making the rounds to film festivals. In Simply to Die For, he plays, I'm going to butcher the name now, he plays Lou Scannon, and has been playing the role since our first version of the show, which is an interactive murder mystery performance. All that to say, welcome, Joe.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you on. I'm so glad you reached out to me, CJ. I think you were the one that responded to a Twitter post I had. I've just been a big fan of audio drama, audio plays, old time radio for a long, long time. How about you? Do you find inspiration from that as well?
Yeah. So I've been listening to podcasts for quite some time, and it wasn't until more recently that I got into fiction. I have a background in history, so I'm a public historian, and I was doing a lot of history podcasts and things like that. And then I was like, this is fun storytelling in audio format. And then I decided to write my own because I make great life choices.
Yeah. Yeah. I can remember as a kid, I would listen to, you know, what we call old time radio. My dad would have had all these tapes that he had recorded and everything, because that's what he listened to when he was a kid, because his parents listened to it. And I was telling my wife this the other day that I can remember as a kid talking into a little recorder, telling jokes and recording stories like I was one of these old time radio people. And she said, "Wow, you haven't really changed much, have you?"
It's just digital now. That's all it is.
It's a different way of promoting it and putting it out there. I think it's one of those things that stays around though forever.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe, so how did you get involved in this project?
So I was wrapped in from the very beginnings of her writings of it.
That's a really good way of putting it. You didn't have a choice.
I didn't have a choice really. So we've been friends since we were in middle school, which was early-ish 2000s.
Don't age us.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine.
You're aging me now, yeah.
And so she had come to me also with this story as part of like a murder mystery, a live-action murder mystery production that we had done. And it was just so much fun when we did it. And
We
still will perform locally. It. And you had even like, at the very, very first one we did, it wasn't really...
It was a smaller cast.
It was a smaller cast, but it was also scripted. Very scripted. And so we kind of had to memorize different monologues, which we were all still not memorized. Like, we memorized it for the most part. We got the gist.
You weren't memorizing it.
But we added our own stuff, which then she took with her twisted brain. Oh, you all will improv things? Okay, this makes it even easier for me. So then she wrote this one, which was just kind of a theme of just 1920s-based murder mystery on some different gangsters that are rivals. And so then she came to me with Lou Scannon, because I like to do different accents, not well, but I like to do them. And this was just like the Brooklyn accent. Hey, how you doing? And I love that.
You're much better at it than when we first started.
Oh, when I first started, it was terrible, because it would go somehow into Southern. And even the people that would come and talk to us were like, why are you Southern? And I was like, I'm working on it. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And that's how I got involved in it too. And then she said, hey, I'm adapting this into an audio serial. Like, do you want to be part of it? And I'm like, of course, I love voiceover stuff. So I'm all in. You tell me what I need to do, where I need to be, and I'll show up hopefully on time.
And Joe was one of we did a small group read through just so I could hear what was going on. If the pacing was working, if the way that things were said were actually, if it was actually going to work when somebody actually spoke the lines outside of my brain. And you read Lou's part, a majority of it. And I literally texted him after we were done. And I was like, so you are playing that role because you opened your mouth and that character came out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. In any role, it's like, hey, if it's offered, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. The starving actor syndrome, huh?
Oh,
little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. You try and get past it. But then, of course, when you're living in a pandemic as an actor, you don't get offered as many things. No. So any opportunity that is bestowed upon you, you want to take advantage of, too.
Yeah. I think that's why we saw such an increase in celebrity podcasts this past year or two. They were all out of work. They needed something to do. So
a lot of just like Zoom read throughs, which I also really liked too. They're just fun to listen to. And I always felt like then this is kind of going to be the renaissance now of audio dramas too, just because that was sort of the work that people could get. And because it's something you could afford to do in your home, it's something you can afford to do in an enclosed space without other people around. So I think that we will see the influx in that as well.
Yeah, we've been talking about that with the Rogues a lot, about we're going to see more and more in forms of audio because you can do that. And I mean, even with us, we have performers that don't live locally, so we can still keep them involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and doing a lot of that recording, you can do it online or in your own blanket fort at home, you know?
Yeah. Great. PJs.
Yep. Go to work in your PJs. Yeah. It's no wonder some people are getting upset about going back to the office, you know. I know I have one friend who was able to do his work online at home, and he was able to take like an 8-hour plus day and get the same amount of work done just in about 6 hours. And he's like, I'm missing that. I'm going to miss that.
Yeah. I think that's, I feel like that's the dream now. At least it's my dream, work from home.
Yeah. I absolutely. Now, CJ, how did you, talked a little bit about how you came up with this idea and all that. Can you flesh that out? Like what was your journey from, you know, middle school to I'm going to write this?
That's a dangerous journey to go on.
we got time. Yeah.
So I did start writing in middle school. Actually, a mutual friend of ours wrote a lot, and that's how I kind of got into writing. You know, a mutual friend wrote things on the side, and I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. So I started doing it. And I think I'm the only one who stuck with it, which maybe says something about me, but who knows? I've dabbled for years. I have some really, really great partners who also write, and we can exchange works with each other, depending on all of our own schedules, because we all, you know, have day jobs and things like that. And we all write very different genres. So I am like, I joke that I wrote PKP. So either people killing people or people kissing people. what I call it. None of my friends write that. So it's always interesting. It was one of those things that I've been doing it for a really long time. I have a few works in progress in hopes of doing novels and novellas and things like that that are in the works. But I, like many other people, got furloughed for 2.5 months at the beginning of the pandemic. I had just switched jobs. So I took 2 1920s murder mysteries that we had performed for my previous job and was like, I really like these characters. Everybody really seems to like these characters. Why don't we smush them together, lock everybody in a house overnight, and just start killing people off? And that was fun. it was my first time writing a script, which was different, but also a lot of fun in getting to focus purely on the dialogue, because you're not getting to focus as much on character descriptions or things like that. So there are choices that some of our actors made that I would have never imagined, but I love what they did. And that's the beauty kind of having a script and working with actors, is they get to take a very basic thing. Kate, who played Vera, everybody loves this character. Yeah. You were not supposed to love this character.
Uh-oh.
She took this character and ran with it and made her very lovable. And she's quickly, easily one of the cast favorites now. It's the funniest thing, but she was not intended to be that at all.
It's the mix of the voice she does for it, the tone of everything she says. It's just, It's just, she does it very, very well.
Vera plays opposite of Lou Scannon. They are the on-again, off-again couple, but she is a silent film star with an obnoxious voice.
Obnoxious, high-pitched sort of voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Kate McNeil plays the part. She does fabulous stuff. She also brought this just like warmth and sweetness to the character that I was not anticipating.
I mean, isn't that neat? You create these characters on paper. You have this idea in your head, but then when they're put to life, they just grow or expand in ways you never imagined.
It's just a crazy thing, the way that people's minds work then, because one person has a different interpretation of it and they bring it to a certain light that you wouldn't think of, that I wouldn't think of, but this person thought, this is what I thought. And then you're like, this sounds way better than anything that I could ever even have imagined putting to life. So it's
a lot
fun
of
to see the creative process
that.
Of it all. Yeah.
Yeah. They just brought, you know, they brought characters to life and gave them little quirks and things like that. Albert did the same thing with Noah Goodman, just a lot of warmth, a lot of, I don't even know how to explain Noah anymore. Cause he was just kind of your standard, like, I'm the good business owner and husband. And he just brought such depth to him that I'm like, hi, can we write a spinoff? I want to write a spinoff now.
All right. Well,
there are quite a few spinoffs.
So everyone needs to go and listen to this show when it comes out. So you'll have grand success.
I can write
spinoffs. And then that way you can know even more about each of these characters. And
if they're dead, it's fine.
Even if they're dead. Yeah. You don't know. You have to listen to find out.
Oh, that. Well, there's always the prequels and backstories and all that. See, not a problem. I'm giving you some $1 million ideas here. So this,
yes, we'll try at you.
Oh, yeah. So then, Joe, how did you get an interest in acting and what led you down that path?
Oh, okay. So really that kind of started in middle school. Well, earlier than middle school. My sister did a play in our middle school. She did Annie and she was involved in it. And I was like, oh, okay. I never thought about theater too much before. Like I'd seen shows, but I was like, all right, whatever. All I knew was really movies and cartoons, and cartoons I loved. Mm-hmm. But when we were in middle school, we went and saw the show, my family and I did. And we're like, oh, this is cool. I was like, I want to do this when I get to middle school. This would be fun. And then when we got to middle school, we did Guys and Dolls, I think. And just, I think the connection you build with people just doing theater shows was just so much fun. And then you just kind of keep doing it. And it's almost like when you're doing it in school, inside of a school system, it's kind of like a repertory theater because it's doing it with the same people almost year on and year out until you graduate from high school, even if the same people stick through it. And then when you combine schools into high school, so I stuck with it all throughout high school, did, you know, one act plays, did
musicals,
did all that. And then I got involved into our teleproductions program, which was a career and tech program in our high school that was focused more on like video and audio editing and broadcasting, but you know, it still kind of led to us like filming different skits and different things that we could do just to be funny that we were allowed to post on our morning announcements and do any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So got involved in that and then went to college, kind of took a step back from it a little bit, just to kind of focus on school and kind of do more of the production side of things. And then it was the end of college. There was one final group project. It was like a studio production class. And so everybody kind of got a role in whatever this like studio production thing that we had to do was. And it was like a live broadcast of something. And my role was just going to be the guest of this talk show. So like, yeah, you did acting stuff before, so you can just be the actor. I was like, all right, cool. And it was promoting some film we came up with some kind of thing. It was like a Rocky spinoff, but instead it was the guy was trying to be an ice dancer. I don't know where that came up with.
It sounds like a college.
So it sounds some weird. Yeah. And so we created this montage, acted that out. And the guy who edited it just did a phenomenal job with it. And then we were like, this is awesome. And after the class, he came to me and he goes, hey, like, I have a script for a film that I wrote and I want to shoot it this summer. Do you want to be a part of it? I was like, yeah, absolutely. I would love to be on set, do whatever. I was like, I always kind of wanted to work on a film set. And he was like, well, do you want to act in it? I said, Sure. Yeah, I haven't done it in a while and went to do it. And, you know, it was very low budget, just super, super indie film because, you know, it's a bunch of college students. But I had a blast doing it, loved getting to do it over and over again. You would think would be annoying to do, but it actually was fun for me because you get to do it kind of differently every time and see which way works best. Mm-hmm. And so once I did that, I did some research, got into the local film scene through Cleveland, Ohio, signed with an agent there, and they would send me auditions for different commercials, some of the different Hollywood productions that would come here. And then I would still kind of seek out any sort of auditions through Facebook groups, through any sort of emailing link that I could sign up with to send me different casting calls for different sorts of films that were shooting around here. So then from there, I kind of just started auditioning, booking different films, and just kind of worked my way up into doing different things. And then...
And still agrees when I come calling.
Yeah, I don't know why. Sometimes, but then you present me with the idea and I'm like, oh, okay, no, I'll do this.
And you're like, it's neat.
Because that's when I started doing all this. That's also when I got involved with It's All Been Done Radio Hour, mm-hmm. which is set up like an old time radio show that's based out of Columbus. And this was 2000.
That's a while ago.
2015. We started that and it was just kind of, it was an up and coming, you know, sort of radio, old time radio show that we just kind of started doing. And we've been doing it now for, it's going to be six years. Yeah. It's after 6 years.
Oh, I think I won the writing contest at 16.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. So now that's something I go down to Columbus, one Saturday a month down each month. And we go down, we perform this show, that's been scripted, and so we perform it in front of an audience. It's set up just like a radio show. You know, we don't have to have costumes. There's no sets. And that's another thing that I do regularly. So I can at least say, you know, throughout all of this pandemic craziness and not having, you know, the pandemonium of everything, we just switched that from in front of people to virtual until we were able to go back in person. And hopefully that continues. Hopefully everything goes okay. Fingers crossed. But, you know, that's something that I've been lucky to keep doing as an actor then too, just as work. But no, that a long story short and kind of rambled all over the place. That's kind of how I got involved with acting and have just loved doing it ever since.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I love hearing people's stories. So that's great.
Hopefully you understood it because I went all over the
place. No, yeah.
I will just always remember doing shows with Joe when we were in middle school and you always drew a mustache on.
Yeah, I wanted the mustache.
Always drew a mustache then, on.
I always wanted the mustache and they always let me do it.
They did. It was
didn't matter what character I was. They were like, oh, whatever, fine. Yeah, Joe's got a
mustache.
Because I could, at the time, I could not grow facial hair. And now, like if my 12-year-old self could see me now, he would be so excited. He'd be like, what is that on your face? Did you draw it? What did you use? No, it's real.
It's real.
I can actually have this now.
But it was like the ongoing joke. Like we knew you were going to go and stay involved with performance. Like the moment that happened.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, my oldest, I have three kids and my oldest just graduated high school, but he started getting involved in the school's plays and musicals and stuff. And that had just a tremendous impact on what he's doing now and where he's going to college. So
it really does. I think a lot of us attribute a lot of self-confidence that we have to falling in love with theater and learning to get up in front of people and speak and sing and perform in all sorts of ways. People never believe me when I tell them I used to be shy.
Oh yeah. No one thinks that of me either. Well, I think everybody thought, I just did. Cause I'm like, I'm good. I can.
You and I can talk to a brick wall, but we also.
And then we're fine. Yeah. But we can talk to people and I don't know. Yeah. And perform. I can't believe there was a time when I was like, I'm good.
Thanks. I used to not audition for things. Yeah. I still hate auditioning, but.
I know you hate auditioning. I made you audition for something already.
And then, I'm not bad at it. I just don't like it.
Yeah. So as you're getting this program together, you get into got your actors gathering. This current pandemic, did that cause some kind of problems with recording and meeting, or were you able to work around that?
Thankfully not too much. So we recorded at the end of July. And in Ohio, we were pretty much, as long as everyone was vaccinated, we could go without masks, things like that. We had worked things out with Nick, our recording artist. The studio space we were in, we could spread people out fairly well. So even if anybody was super concerned, we could put a mic farther away for those people and we could keep that space very easily. But pretty much, if I remember correctly, I think our entire cast was vaccinated. We'd all been really, really careful. And we put in our own COVID protocols on top of for what we expect of our performers. But besides one or two in-person audit or emails, rehearsals, I can speak. We did everything over Zoom pretty much.
Everything was over Zoom because I had missed a lot of rehearsals. Because
you
of work. Could,
yeah, and you couldn't do the first read through, and then Cyrus was in town. So we did a small rehearsal with some of his scene partners.
And then I just remember doing all Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until we recorded it, and that it's still worked out very well. I mean, of course, with Zoom, there's always the feedback and delays of like in between lines and between different things. So
one of our actors was in the middle of rehearsals for a Shakespeare show. So he was logging in on his way home from those rehearsals. So he found Dan found a cemetery that he would be like zooming in with us. That he'd be sitting in the parking lot. It was the funniest thing the first time. He's like, yeah, I'm sitting in the middle of a graveyard. We're like, Dan, are you okay?
Wait, I didn't know this.
You didn't know Dan McKinnon was
no
cemetery?
That's terrifying and awesome at the same time.
It's peak Dan McKinnon. But it goes to show how devoted our people are. So we did a lot over Zoom. It did cause some issues, but also I think it was really exciting when we got to record. And I can't say this because I was actually not in the recording booth. I did not get to hear when they were recording. I haven't heard the entire thing yet. But I think it brought a lot of energy and excitement because you were all finally in the same room that you could feed off of each other so much easier. Yes.
It was, there was something different. Like it already sounded good on Zoom, but it sounded great when we were just in person recording because there wasn't the delays, but also the energy was just there with everyone's lines interacting with each other. Cause it's like, you're in person with this person. You're really,
you can feed off of them,
feeding off of them. Yeah. And it was just, it was a lot better in person. And even like, as people were leaving, cause we would record it by each scene, as people were kind of walking out, they're like, oh, I didn't think someone would do that. That was awesome. I was trying to just not react as well as I did just because they're like, oh, I have to speak. I have to say lines, but then you just kind of get entranced with what people are doing. And it's just, it was just a much better feeling, but I think it's just because everyone finally got to come to the room together and record it.
Mm-hmm. And most of our actors are stage actors. So they're used to having a scene partner next to them that they can feed off of, that they can kind of have those little verbal and visual.
I lost it too.
I'm a writer and I can't think of words.
That's fine.
In fact, writers are the worst at words. That's why we edit. Those little visual cues where, one of our actors might like just make a little face or something. And you're like, oh, we're going for this now. Okay. And you're like, we're along for the ride, which is fun.
Yeah. What other kind of challenges are there when you're doing a radio drama? Besides all the COVID stuff, what else do you guys run into for challenges that you have to try to overcome?
I can speak a little bit on the script side. So we had a cast of 16 actors and then a narrator who is their own character. Our narrator is there for a good time. So you have a cast of 16, 17 characters total. We have one actress who doubled up on parts. And the struggle early on is you want people to fall in love with each and every one of these characters, especially as you're killing them off, because there are ones where you sit there and you're like, oh, we we just killed them off. I distinctly remember Kathleen, who is actually our narrator, was a beta reader for me. And one of her notes was, she's like, oh my gosh, I love this character. Like early on, it's like scene three. I hope they survive. Well, guess what? They're the first one that dies.
Oh no.
And then she has this little like, oh, at the, like at the neck when she finds out that they are dead. Yeah. So it's a struggle giving all of these characters the same amount of screen time so that you can build that, that repertoire with your audience. That was really rough because there were parts that I wanted to really include. And I would sit there and I go, I just don't, between the time limits and needing to make sure that I give all these other characters the same amount of screen time or chances to get the audience to fall in love with them. We had to cut some things. And that was a challenge for me. Steve, that makes me sad. There are scenes that I'm still sad about.
Because I'm just the way that everybody worked together. I'm like, I wish everyone just would have somehow lived. And you just kill off imaginary people that aren't even involved.
Everyone lives.
I think for me, I think the biggest challenge was when we first started recording, because, you know, as you're recording different things, you don't want all the huffs and puffs. You want to make it easier for the editor then too, the audio editor. You want them to be at ease record, like at least editing through everything. So you're like, I don't want to breathe during this as the narrator saying something. So whenever you have to breathe or if you have to cough or sneeze for whatever reason, you kind of just want to turn to the side and like duck. So that way you're not near any mics at all. Mm. And I think that was always kind of challenging too, which I know.
Awareness.
Yeah. Just kind of the awareness of where the mics are at and just making sure, you know, since it's not a film, it's not theater, because theater, you usually just have mics already, but like there's not a professional mic that you're standing in front of specifically speaking to that in order to get the best sound. Mm. And I think that's always just the transition for everybody too. And just trying not to do all the sniffs, do the coughs, the sneezes, any of that, where it's going to affect anything.
While we were recording them in the studio, I was recording behind the scenes videos for our actors. And one of the things that I've noticed, I do it too. There's this little like tongue click that a lot of people do right mm-hmm. before they start speaking. Editing that out is a pain.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, where you're like, okay. And then you start talking.
Oh, did I do it?
I haven't edited yours yet.
Oh, God.
I do it all the time. So.
Yeah. I do too. When I'm editing my podcast episodes, it's getting to where I can recognize the squiggles. Like, okay, that one's a tongue click. That's
Once you start looking at the actual WAV file, you're like, oh yeah. No, that's what that is.
Yeah. And thankfully I can do that because I can follow where my voice is, and I can just easily edit me asking them questions because I'm not mic'd out. And I'm like, okay, great. We start here. And this is where they sat down. I went, that's a good question. And I'm like, okay, and here's where they actually start.
Yeah.
But it's all those little things that you have to be aware of, especially in an audio format. It's easier to forget, I think, on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're on stage, you don't think about it.
Yeah. And I don't know if I notice it as much on stage either. Now, since I've been podcasting, I've been more aware of like vocal noise and stuff, I guess. But a lot of that, and once in a while I'll think, oh, there's a mouth noise, you know, it's getting kind of distracting, but I don't know, when it's live, it's different.
Yeah. You don't notice it as much when it's live.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. The microphone will pick up like throat gurgles and stomach growls. Got to make sure you have dinner before you record.
You're like, great. Yeah,
that's my story.
The world knows.
I want to say that's had to have happened to me before.
I'm sure.
It's had to have.
Yeah. Yeah. So when does this radio play start? When's the start date?
Yeah. So our first episode actually drops on November 4th, the same day as the day gala. It was a little serendipitous. So it'll be dropping once a week on Thursdays for 10 weeks after that. And then we have a few little things that we are putting up on our social media. Like I mentioned, behind the scenes stuff. Kate, who plays Vera, does some work with audiobooks. So actually the two of us have been looking at doing some fun little behind the scenes stuff because she is big into history like I am. So Vera might get her own mini podcast throughout the entire thing.
You did talk about that.
I don't know if I told you that.
You talked to me a little bit about just that something was happening. Something is happening. And that sounds fantastic.
I'm really excited for that because we're both a bunch of history nerds, but essentially she's just going to channel Vera and we're going to improv and it's going to be interesting.
Now I'm imagining like a true crime podcast kind of alongside with that, your show.
Vera as a true crime, that would be terrifying.
Still have Kathy as the narrator, just being Kathy like, why is she doing this?
Our narrator does not like Vera at all.
No.
The character, not the actress.
The two actresses get along very well.
I figure that's what you meant. Yeah. Oh boy. Well, it sounds like we can expect a lot of laughter and maybe some emotions there too, huh?
We're hoping. Yeah. It's purposely meant to be melodramatic and a little ridiculous and things like that. So
a lot of ridiculous things happen. So that's, yeah. When people are like, what is this? It's meant to happen. It's meant to be that way. It's one of those stories where something crazy happens and it's like, oh, it's just, that's just what it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're not here to, we're, it's not serious. It's not literary or anything like that. It's a fun, silly story. And
can't be fun.
Yeah. We had already cast you, so you didn't have to do the full audition. All of our actors had to audition with a campy death. And we didn't give them any prompts beyond that. We're like, give us a campy death.
That sounds like a fun audition. And
do
I don't
it right
care
now.
For auditioning either. No, I don't want to do it now. I have to think and prepare on it.
That's right.
Did you give it to them last minute?
No.
Oh, okay. No, I
would prepare.
Yeah, I would have wanted to prepare for that.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, but essentially we wanted to make sure that they could embody that kind of spirit because, you know, it is a little ridiculous. You have a bunch of essentially stock characters. I mean, mm-hmm. you go beyond the being stock characters, but you know, you have the two gang lords and you've got the brewer and you've got two girls in entertainment. And like, it's just, mm-hmm. you have these specific archetypes that you're just kind of playing with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really can't wait now. Just hearing about all these different characters. It's,
they're fun.
Sounds like you just threw in a bunch of crazy people into a
pretty much.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. We were all crazy in general, so it all just kind of worked
we're
out.
We're all well. Theater people. That's
yeah.
how it works.
Throw them all in, see what happens. Yeah.
Pretty much. You throw them all together and you go, all right, let's hope for the best.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about challenges, but what has been some positive things that have come to you through this experience?
Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Oh, I just did the lip clicking thing. I just noticed it. Now I'm paying attention to it.
Now I have to edit that. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least it was like I waited at first. I would say, I mean, the positive thing about it all is that for me, at least, I found more of a love for voice acting, more so than I already had before, and something I wanted to focus more on. So I think it just kind of built this new love, I think, for all of us too, on just, you know, as throughout history with everything that acting is kind of formed from just only being staged to then getting into technology with voiceover and radio into television acting to film acting. And I think for actors, you know, the positive thing is that, you know, it's kind of getting us back to not everything is TV and film and stage. You know, there are other ways that people can act. And this is just a different art pretty much that people weren't really thinking about, I don't think, as much before. And they would always say it's a dying form, but then with podcasting, and then I think with everything with the pandemic, you know, that sort of brought it all to light. And I think that's a positive thing too, because there's so many different things with audio that you kind of create your own vision of it all too. So as you're listening to it, you kind of create what you think you're seeing as opposed to what is actually mm-hmm. happening. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
No, that was a lot of fun because so we did this as a production for the Akron Civic Theater, as a beta kind of performance for them over the pandemic also last fall. And we had to do it with a limited cast, which meant we were doubling up almost all of our characters.
Yeah. I think almost everybody.
I think it was you and Sam. who were the only ones who didn't have who weren't doubled up on character parts. So then characters, like actors, had to learn, I can't just use my regular voice because I have to make these two characters sound different. And one of the things that, one of the feedback I got was like, we had three girls who had lower speaking voices. And yeah, it's, you have to differentiate those because they were like, there's three characters. I don't know which one is which. And it was just, we had three girls who have naturally lower speaking voices and it makes things different. So it's a, it's exercising different muscles that you don't always get to do unless you're a character actor on stage, where you, you are doing the, those parts naturally. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. That was, that
I wish I could have gotten the, you know, it, read apart.
Yeah. Instead of being surrounded with all these people, you know, you, we got to kind of just play around with different, we kind of just got to strengthen just a little bit more of what our talents could be. Mm-hmm. I would say just with our voices, and that's fun.
Yeah. It's a different skill set.
Yeah.
It's
a different muscle to work out too. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of my positive things. I mean, I, it was really exciting for me to have actors performing something I had written. Also very stressful. Like,
because you also kind of organized everything too. And
I was on the production team also. So,
and we, and I know at least we had to, you know, be cautious of everything. Cause that was kind of still at the height of COVID. We didn't really have a vaccine. We didn't have a vaccine at the time too. So we had to make sure
when we did the performances at the Actors Center, we didn't,
you know, we had to be very cautious on if anybody interacted with anybody that had it. Cause I know there was one time that I had interacted with someone who had it, and just
we had a few actors that were exposed, and we had to find ways to either patch them in, which didn't work well.
We learned that very quickly.
Yeah. Or, you know, we had actors the last minute covering other parts that they had never read before. And God bless them. They were all troopers. A lot of our cast in the audio production that we're releasing are, ones that came from that performance. A lot of our main characters.
Yeah.
A lot of our main characters. But a lot of them also just, you know, they carried over. Some of them are playing roles that they had played. Others are playing completely different roles that we weren't expecting them to play. But when they auditioned again, we were like, oh, this is fun. You should play this. Why didn't we cast you for this one the first time? And they brought different, personalities and, just different energies to some of these characters, which was really great. I really liked that. That was a lot of fun getting to do both of those. I was stressed either way though.
You were going to be stressed no matter what.
People are listening to things that I wrote. It's nerve wracking.
I can be kind of a private kind of guy. You know, if I write something, it, somebody finds it, I'm like, oh, don't read that. You know, I can't imagine putting that stuff out there. And
It has been very strange. That was the performance where a lot of people who know me in real life found out what my pen name is and started finding me on social media. And I'm like, real people are fine. People who know me in real life. And like, I knew you knew my pen name.
Yeah, you had told me that.
A handful of very close friends that like, it wasn't an issue. But like, I will share things on my writers, information that I don't necessarily share on my personal, and vice versa. So every now and then, we're going to have a cat.
Oh, that's fine.
I had to start laughing at first because I'm looking, I saw him just peeking out from the doorway and I'm like, oh, okay. He's trying to get in.
But we're struggling.
Okay, he gave up. Okay.
but that was a thing. Like a very good friend of ours that I have not spoken to in a while has now found one of my social media profiles. And I mean, it has my face on it. And I'm like, I don't know how you found me. I have no idea how this person that I haven't spoken to in years found me. I will tell you who it is offline.
I don't know who it is.
A little nerve-wracking because it's showing a different part. And like a lot of these people know that I write, but they've never seen what I've written. I mean, heck, exes of mine don't even know what my pet name is. Like, hi.
Here.
You know, I know. Hi, Katie.
Are we going to pick the cat up?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Hello.
Maybe this he'll stop meowing.
He'll probably sit here. Yeah. No, this is Toby, the 18-year-old cat.
Oh, goodness.
And he just loves love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is my favorite part of Zoom is when the pets crash the party. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I was like, I didn't shut the door all the way. I was like, oh, I think he'll probably not even hear us.
I was like, he'll come in.
And then I'm like, no,
I'm not that stupid. Yeah. I knew the cat.
I didn't even think. I'm like, no, he'll be fine. But
yeah, we have a parakeet and I'm recording in the attic right now. A couple weeks ago, I was trying to record in the living room with the interview. And whenever we talk, our parakeet decides he's part of the conversation too. So you hear this parakeet.
They have to be involved.
They have to be involved. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. All right. Well, I am really looking forward to this program coming up.
Yeah.
I can't wait, but here, before we go, I like to ask three questions of my guests here to kind of pick your brain a little bit about just stories and things like that. So first of all, I would ask both of you, who has been a favorite author, or do you have a favorite book? Or I guess as an actor, is there an actor that you admire that's just been a great influence on you?
Do you want me to go or do you want to go?
You can go first. Because I'm thinking of favorite author. And
Yeah.
I'm thinking of both, yeah.
Do I have a both? If we're going performers, so I'm a singer on the side because I have many, many side hustles.
Oh, sure.
I make good life choices. Mm-hmm. So I always love anything with Julie Andrews. Like, I have a very similar vocal range to her. And that's the closest thing I can do when people ask me what I sing. And I'm like, if Julie Andrews sang it, I can probably sing it. So I always love her. I also love that she's so classy.
She's always so classy.
I want to be Julie Andrews when I grow up.
I feel like even if she was trying Smith. To be classy, it would still turn out classy. Oh,
I want to be Maggie Smith when I grow up too.
Yes. Maggie Smith, especially. Yeah.
I always think that a lot of us find those performers that, you know, have really put an impact on the industry and that we can see where we would like to grow as not only as performers, but human beings. For authors, this is really, really hard. And I think you put in your email, you're like, you probably have a list. And I'm like, half of it depends on what I'm reading at the time.
Right. I'm with you.
childhood authors, I can always say Tamora Pierce. I grew up reading her books, all of them, just all of them. And I actually picked up one of her series, the Circle of Magic series, the other day, slightly terrified that I was going to ruin my childhood. But I was trying to remember her magic system and the way her magic system worked for something else I'm working on. I am one of those writers that I will go through periods of intense media consumption because I'm absorbing a lot of things. So I'm in one of those phases right now.
Sure.
So I love Tamora Pierce. She writes such amazing books. They're for kids. They're well-written. They don't condescend at all. Like they're just very real and they don't shy away from anything, but you also get really diverse casts that like any kid who picks them up can find themselves in her books. Okay. So if you have kids, Tamora Pierce, I always highly recommend. She was a huge influence on me in terms of authors that I'm reading now. I love Rhys Bowen, who is a British author. She writes mysteries, cozy mysteries. A lot of hers are historic based and I love them dearly. They're so much fun. I haven't read more of her recent stuff, but I love her Royal Spinus series and her Molly Murphy mysteries. They're all great.
Yeah. I'm familiar with her. Yeah.
Oh, I love her so much. She's so much fun to follow on social media. Just a lot. I love, Kat Sebastian is a wonderful romance writer. She writes a lot of historic romance, queer historic romance. I can't remember. I had a list. You knew I had a list before I came in. I'm blanking on that. Alexis Hall.
Yeah.
Written some great things. Oh, yeah, I just mentioned that.
We were just talking about
He is well known for writing boyfriend material right now, but I just finished reading his Mystery, which is a Sherlock Holmes esque style. Highly recommend. It's The Affair of the Mysterious Letter. It was a sassy characters, and I am very happy. But yeah, I bounce around a lot. It depends on what I'm reading. I just finished the Will Darling first Will Darling Mystery, and those are great. I forget the author's name. I'm sorry. I am lucky that I remembered those that many. And Aidan Thomas is a wonderful emerging author. He just had his second book, and I'm in the middle of that. And both Cemetery Boys and Lost in the Neverwoods are just phenomenal.
And see, this is why I like asking this question, because I've only heard about half of those authors. So I get to add books to my TBR now.
Highly recommend all of them.
That's awesome. Yeah, I love it. Joe, how about you? Unless you have more.
I'll stop now. I will stop, or I will ramble about books all day.
You will. Yeah.
Nice.
You always tell me about new books.
And I'm like, Joe, read a book.
And then I forget about them. For me, authors, I knew when I was a kid, my favorite books to read, and it's very immature, are the Captain Underpants books by Dave Pilkey. Love those books. All I wanted as a kid after those came out, because I said, this is just so awesome. There's Flipperama. It's just a mix of just, you know, the art in it, all just the goofy, ridiculous, potty humor stories. And I'm like, this is great for me.
Great for kids.
Great for kids too, especially if parents are okay with it. And then all I ever wanted as a kid was, this needs to turn into a movie or some kind of cartoon. And then it finally did. And my inner childhood was just crying out of excitement. I also remember as a kid really liked, I loved Goosebumps books. So R.L. Stine was one for me. And because I liked anything that was creepy, eerie. And then the Wayside Storybooks from Wayside School.
Oh my gosh, I remember those. You can never get them out of the library.
Love those. I have the first two, I think. I think I have copies of the first two.
They were very popular in our school.
What was it, Lewis Sackar?
I was going to say Lewis Carroll, and I was like, that is not Lewis, right.
And I don't feel bad because I don't remember how to pronounce the last name, but I was like, it's Sackar or Satcher, but I loved those books. Thought those
you
were
could
fantastic.
Never get them out of our school library because somebody always had them.
Yeah. So yeah, not just that's funny.
That was a very popular.
Elementary school for me. That was just, I bought it right away. As soon as it was the book fair, bought it, loved it. And then the Series of Unfortunate Events from Lemony Snicket. Loved those books as well.
He's out with a new book. Kate just told me that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Don't ask me. Kate just finished reading it.
Okay. I'll have to look into it. Yeah. I was like, I loved those books as well. And then as I got older, it was more just Stephen King, like pretty much just that's where the horror kind of just transitioned. Stephen King, Carrie, Cujo, It, which I'm still terrified of clowns, but yeah, you know, that's just, that comes with the territory of just not just the original TV miniseries, but also the book as well. And then also the new adaptation of it.
Right.
Now see actors. Like her with authors, for actors for me, it always depends on what I'm watching and when I'm watching it. Like longtime ones, I think Tom Hanks has always been an influence. As a kid, the very first movie I remember seeing in theaters was Toy Story. Because I was like, so of course the voice of Woody was just like, who is this? Like, what? And I'm like, okay, this is Tom Hanks. And then right away that led into Forrest Gump for me to watch. So then I'm like, oh, this guy does a lot of different things. And so just anything that he's done has just always been inspiring for me. And then it's just been performances I've tried to remember offhand. Andrew Garfield, that's kind of tied a little bit with just that comic book superhero stuff with Spider-Man, but also the dramatic side with like Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, that was so good.
Oh, that was a phenomenal movie. I don't know. Yeah. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen that one. You know me. I live under a rock.
Yes,
sometimes.
He plays someone who goes into the war and refuses to use guns.
Oh, so it's my type of war movie.
Well, I mean, obviously all the war stuff still happens because it's a war, but he refuses based off of his own beliefs and everything.
My type of war movie.
And so it was just, I loved it because I'm like, that would be me in a war, but also
that
I
would be me in a war.
Would not have been as brave as he was.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that's a whole other podcast episode.
Yeah.
That movie is so good. And
it's such a great movie. I know I've seen it twice, but I need to watch it another like three or four more times because I know I really liked it a lot.
Okay, movie night.
Yeah. See, so that way
add it to our list.
An actress that I have just been very inspired by is Florence Pugh. I feel like she doesn't, she just really immerses herself into any role that she plays. She plays a lot of historical figures back in sort of the, you know, medieval times, but then she also just does so many different characters. And of course now she's in Black Widow, but also she did Midsommar with Ari Aster as the director. Phenomenal, just traumatized Roy. She just did fantastic with it. So it's just, it's seeing kind of that, just how the brain works, and she just does a phenomenal job with it. I had a whole nother list of people.
See, right? We had lists.
Because then I'm thinking of Adam Sandler was one I grew up with. Love the goofy, just again, that kind of correlates with Captain Underpants. Just goofy potty humor that my dad loved, and so I loved it too.
I like that that's the humor you grew up with, and I grew up with Benny Hill.
Yeah, you grew up with Benny Hill.
And Alan Alda.
Billy Madison. Adam Sandler, yeah. I grew up with Adam Sandler stuff. That's what I grew up with. And
my dad told me the other day that the guy who played Lil Abner like in the movie and stuff just recently died. And I'm like, nobody else but me is going to know what that is.
Yeah.
I don't think you watch Lil Abner. I don't know the actor's name.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
you know me. I don't know.
No, I know you don't know people's names. Usually I know. And then I'm like, oh, no, they're from this, 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 and this. Somehow I correlate it with my
own. I'll find it for you.
But yeah, I feel, yeah, for me, it's just based off of what I'm watching, too. And when I'm watching it, one show that just has a phenomenal ensemble cast that I just finished season 3 on, because it just was released on Netflix, is Sex Education.
Which we both love.
Just the entire cast, just, and I want to say they're all, I don't know, they might not all actually be teenagers, but the, you know, it's
they're pretty young.
It's not like
because it's a British show, it's not like the Americans where we're like, we're casting 30-year-olds as 14-year-olds.
Yeah, so
they are young.
The age where they're close in age, and they do such a phenomenal job just with everything that
they look like teenagers.
They look like teenagers, and they're just, I mean, they're written like teenagers, but and they just perform it so well. The depths of all of those characters are just so well done. You need to see
season 3. I will finish season 3.
It's so good.
Ongoing conversation.
The adult characters too are phenomenal.
Yeah, all the actors are great.
Oh, that's why I said the ensemble cast there is just not recognized, I think, as well as it should be, because I think they're outstanding.
They do a wonderful job, and they tell great stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen that show yet. I saw the trailers and different things for it, and it looked, I mean, like you said, it looked phenomenal, but
it's well fun. Acted.
Don't watch it with your kids.
If makes you uncomfortable.
If it makes you uncomfortable, don't watch it with your kids. Yeah. That's what I would say.
I caught that from just the trailers. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because right away, I know when I started
like
it.
The first scene, like you turn it on. And
my cousin is the one who is like, watch it. Just don't watch it around any young. I was like, okay. Watching, I was like, oh, now I get what you're saying. I didn't expect this at all. But
I think it's also very just human.
Like, it is human. I think it adds.
It's so nice because it's dealing with things that we all dealt with as kids, but also as we grew older. And honestly,
but I think
it's such a great combination of a really good story that's being written as script and like really amazing actors who are bringing that story to life.
And it just adds the topic of conversation that people are so uncomfortable to talk about, that it's like, hey, like, no, this is a normal thing. Talk about it.
These are things that you have to talk about. Yeah. And even like the little minor characters get really, really great arcs. And there's great representation. We obviously are fans. Sex education, please pay us for this lovely promo.
All in, yeah.
Today's podcast is brought to you by.
Yeah.
See what goes. We'll tag them. Netflix. Hey,
yeah,
hit
Netflix.
Us up.
Yeah.
Love this show. Just keep
making it.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right. Second question here. What was an early experience where you learned that language or story had power?
Do you want to go or do you want me to go?
I mean, I'll go, but I
don't. Do you need to come up with?
I mean, if you have an answer.
I don't, but you know me. I'll ramble until I find something.
Yeah,
because
I think on this one.
So I was always a bookworm. I was that little kid that when I brought home my report cards, it was like, Sam reads a lot and talks a lot. And I'm like, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. So I don't know if there was anything really, really early on that I can definitively say. I can say that I grew up in a family of bookworms, though. My mom reads a ton. And actually, my mom and I do have some crossover with genres that we like to read. The two of us tend to read more genre fiction, whereas my father reads a ton of history. And he's where I got that from. Just from a really young age, I was given, you know, American Girl doll books and Dear America, My America. I loved history. So the idea that I could be transported to another world, and I'm an only child, and my mom was getting her master's when I was little. I live in a traditional neighborhood, so I couldn't go outside and play with the neighbor kids. I had to do a lot of entertaining myself, especially because my parents were older when they had me. So most of my friends, their kids are like 10 years older than I am. So essentially it was Sam needed to find something that she could do quietly and not bother the adults. And I just latched on to reading, and it was all downhill from there. God bless library cards. I think probably just from a really young age, I was exposed to it a lot. And my parents encouraged it. I'm probably one of the few kids that their parents had to yell at them to put their books down to come for dinner.
I'm right there, or to
go to bed.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No, like this tracks for me, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah, mine was TV.
I mean, there was that too, but
mine was TV.
but I think as I got older, really realizing that these books had even more transformative powers, and that not only you can use words to tell a story, but you can use words to really impact the soul. I was thinking about this when I was coming over, because I was listening to some music, and since I'm a singer, the beauty of music is you have amazing words with amazing music. And it just, you get this visceral response, but you can't get that with just, you can get it, but there's something so powerful about putting both of these that can touch your soul together at the same time. And I think that really good writing can do that. And I know that just the other day, I like sat there and put a book down and I was like, all right, I'm crushed. Excuse me for a minute. And then I'm picking it back up and
immediately
delving into it. But yeah, I think that's why we keep coming back to storytelling. We're humans. We love to tell stories.
Yeah.
They may or may not be good.
Yeah.
But we try.
We try. Yeah.
I see. For me, I can't think of like a specific.
Neither can book I.
Or a specific. I know as a kid for me, I mean, I liked just reading anything. I mean, it was more just, you know, the potty humor stuff. So I'm like, but it's still a language, you know, to laugh. I think if I can relate
using
that to anything,
to laugh, yeah.
Using language to just laugh and enjoy life. And, you know, there's times to be serious, but, you know, it's trying to make the best of everything. I think that's kind of always become my life motto. I think it's just to try and make the best of every situation possible, no matter how bad it can get. And, you know, I think reading even those kids' potty humor books was kind of like that. It kind of took away if there was anything serious going on. I could just kind of delve into those books or delve into shows like that too. You know, watching anything from Family Guy and Futurama to those sort of things when I was a teenager, because, you know, being a teenager can be brutal.
Yeah.
And, you know, going through all the different hormonal things that I think I escaped with that. And then also just different in music too.
Yeah.
Music has always been so powerful, and it's not just, you know, the actual instruments, the vocals, it's also the lyrics, you know, those when you're actually listening to it and actually seeing what story they're trying to tell too, just through, you know, a possible 3-4 minute song, you know, it can be a whole story about someone they've lost because of an overdose or something that's just so gut-wrenching. And you can just tell from the voice, like they've lived through this.
Have you seen Waitress?
No, I have not.
So the reason that I was thinking about this was, I'm a musical theater junkie. I had my music on just shuffle, and there's a beautiful song from the musical Waitress called She Used to Be Mine. And it's, for anybody who's familiar with the movie, it's towards the end of it where she's realizing all of these things that she's worked for isn't going to happen the way that she thought it was. The life that she had planned out for her is not what she was planning. And she has this entirely new thing, which is not what she ever asked for. And she's not the person that she thought she was, and she doesn't recognize herself anymore. And it's just this, like, the music is beautiful, but you just stop and you listen to the words of somebody who is just like putting it out there and having this realization that they don't recognize themselves anymore because who they thought and they were going to be.
I feel like we've all been there too.
Yeah. And you just sit there for a minute and you're like, I'm going to just have a moment.
Sit and absorb it and think, you know, is this something that you've been through? Because I genuinely believe we've all been through that, where we have this idea of where we're going to go. And, you know, it, you know, 10 years down the road, you're kind of just looking back. You're like, oh,
this is not where I thought I was.
This is not where I thought. This is not the plan. This is not anything that I expected. And
And the music that Sarah Bareilles wrote for that song is gorgeous. But I honestly, at the end of the day, it's those words that you go back to it because it's just, it's absolutely just so powerful. And when you sit there, either listening to it on Spotify, and then she can listen to the entire soundtrack on Spotify, or wherever you get fine music from. I don't know where else you get.
I'm a Spotify person. Okay. There's also Apple Music.
We are also not sponsored by Spotify. Spotify, sponsor us.
accepting offers though. So
yeah, we are a very small theater and production company that has very little funding. So we have lots of ideas and not a whole lot of funding to get them done by. But yeah, it's just, it's this beautiful, just you sit there and you want to sing along and you want to belt out your heart. And it's those words at the end of the day where you're like, everyone has felt that, where you sit that back and look. And I think that's the beauty of whether it's a written word or a performance, music,
anything. Film, anything. It's just, it's art and it tells a story no matter.
And it touches your heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Now it's true though.
It's definitely true. Yeah. I can remember reading, I've probably tell the story every episode now, but reading the Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury. I don't know if you're a science fiction reader at all, but I read it as a teenager and that was the book that, I don't know, it just blew me away, you know.
And that is a book that shows up all the time. I have not read them, but that I hear all the time, especially from science fiction people.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. He's had a huge impact on a lot of writers today. I mean, even Stephen King famously said, you know, without Ray Bradbury, there's no Stephen King. And I read that book as a teenager, just in a dark place, like you were saying, you know, Joe, you know, and all that. And it was kind of, that's for me where I realized that stories have power, you know, that to impact, to change, to encourage, to give us escape, to teach, instruct, all that. It's amazing. And then what you were saying, CJ, just the different ways to tell story through music, through novels, through plays, through whatever. There's a lot of ways to do that. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. These questions are starting to become like therapy for me. So
everyone needs a little therapy in their life.
Everyone does.
Yeah. This third question, especially. So what advice do you have for any, usually if I'm interviewing an author, I'll ask, you know, what advice you have for aspiring authors, but, you know, aspiring creative people, whether they're actor, musician, writer.
Creatives is a good word for the whole catch-all. Do you want to go or do you want me to go?
Do it. Just do it.
Just do it.
Find the
thought you were telling me to do it.
No, sorry. No. My advice is go for it. I love seeing now like the different memes that, you know, everyone has a first podcast. It doesn't mean it's going to be great. Everyone has a first, you know, film. Doesn't mean it's going to be great. You have to do it in order to continue to do it, to get better. And I think that's good for any sort of creative thing. So just do it, you know, do a little bit of research, but go for it. Mm-hmm. Of course, no matter what, don't worry about failure. Everybody fails. I've failed plenty of times. I still do it.
And we'll fail many more times.
Yeah. We're going to fail no matter what. But I think if you don't trying, you don't keep going after it, you're never going to get to where you know, that little version of yourself thought you were going to be. So just keep doing it. Keep going for what you want to do. And That's it. Yeah, just do it. That's Sorry. That's always just been.
Toby just glared at me.
Then he says, "Your turn. Go."
My turn. I will second. Just do it, because sometimes, and I think it's especially true of writers, we get so bogged down in. Am I plotting this right? Is the pacing right? Have I used? I'm bad at formatting. It takes me forever to figure out, especially for like. Novels or novellas, it takes me forever to figure out like, what is my format? How am I telling the story? I am the worst. I am in like draft 6 of my novel because I keep changing it and I need to stop. I think I finally found what works. But yeah, so definitely just do it. I think the other thing is, do what you love and do it in your own time. I know so many people who feel pressured to have their novel written by the time they're 25.
Yeah.
I had to take a break. I did not write a ton during college. I didn't read a ton during college because you're so busy with other things. I didn't perform a ton either.
See, that's
you're so busy with other things, and you're allowed to take those breaks, and you should take those breaks. It's important. To have those, I mentioned that I go through cycles where I consume a lot of media. That's important to my creative process. Cause I sit there and I see what other creatives are doing and, it's really great, but also, yeah, just do what you love. I have so many writer friends who don't write anything like me. And it's so easy to get caught in like, I have to write the next great American novel. No, you don't. Mm-hmm. You have to tell a story that you love. Mm-hmm. And for me, that happens to be genre fiction. And sometimes there's a world out there that can be really cruel to different types of writing. And it you shouldn't be. Like, you're going to find people that love it. If you love it, there are other people out there who will love it too. Same with performing.
Oh, yeah. Because now I'm like, no, that's, you know, don't compare yourself to other people.
No.
Too, because I think that's the thing that actors kind of get. Like,
wait, all creative.
Why? Yeah. Like, why is this person that, you know, would be auditioning for the same roles that I'm getting? Why are they, you know, all of a sudden like way like famous and I'm just still here? Mm-hmm. Like, what is it that I need to do differently? I needed to be at this point at this age too. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't help at all. Everyone moves at their own pace. Everyone's got their own way of doing things. You do what you love and you do it the best you can.
And all but forms just, are valid.
Yeah.
I just ran into somebody and I didn't realize that they were a writer when I first met them. But they write a very different style than I do. And they were a little dismissive of some of my stuff. And I was like, okay. and then I've recently learned some of their things that they're writing on. And I'm like, oh, we're going back to pitting writers against each other. And that is like, that's not my jam. I want all the people to write all the things.
Support each other too, because we're all kind of in the same, creatives are all kind of in the same boat together.
We're all struggling.
Everyone's struggling. Everyone wants to keep doing this, but you know, if you don't help each other out, you know, no one's really going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. Instead, if you just pit each other against each other, nothing's going to get done. It's just going to be.
And you learn so much more from other people who do things differently from you. Like Joe, I could never play. Well, for various reasons, but I could never play any parts that you play.
I mean, that's true. But yeah.
I've learned a lot from you.
Some of the times that I read, you had to read for Loose Cannon when I wasn't there.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm going to be Joe.
Well, I couldn't perform the arias that you do. That's physically impossible.
Well, that's also just physically impossible.
That's physically impossible for me. But yeah,
but you learn.
I mean, even when you watch actors, you learn, don't compare, but you watch what they do and it's like, oh, why did they have this certain look at this time? What was their, you know, motion behind all that?
And support people.
Yeah.
Like that's at the end of the day, creatives are great at supporting each other. We are also really great at being judgy because we're all very insecure about what we're creating.
We're all very judgmental of ourselves.
So I think we can learn a lot from each other and we should, but yeah, it's a process that we all have to take at our own time and our own pace. And there is no right or wrong answer, but you just got to do it. Yeah. And when your body is telling you that you need to take a break, then take the break. It happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
I still am on a break technically.
That's a lie.
From acting. Yeah, technically, yeah. Like when COVID happened, obviously
I call and you show up. It's a lie.
Yeah. I wasn't seeking out auditions. I kind of was turning a lot of stuff down just because I was like, no, I think I needed a break for myself, because I was just like, is this the point of my life where I want to be? And, you know, it's slowly getting back into the swing of things. And, you know, it's you got to take it at your own pace. There's nothing wrong with
taking breaks.
And also,
I'm doing that right now because we're so focused on Simply to Die For. I'm sitting here now like, I want to work on something, but I don't know what.
No, no, but I consume media just like you do during the breaks. I consume the media because I've been consuming a lot now. And I've been neglecting it all until now, and it's been great.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
That's what
you do. It's been great.
It might not be the healthiest thing, but we all do it.
That's right.
I just thought about something else, and then lost it.
I
know. I'm like, ah, crap. Shoot.
We warned you that we're chatting.
Yeah.
This might be a two-part episode. Who knows?
Sorry.
No, that's all right.
I don't know.
I like to let the conversations go where they go. So,
you know what? That's where you get
a lot of
that's really good creative advice right there.
Just let it go, because
I just finished writing a novella, and it's for a friend that doesn't know that I was writing it for him. He sent me something that inspired me and doesn't know that he is getting a 40,000 word novella. But literally I have zero plans. I had zero plotting for it, but oh my gosh, I had so much fun writing it. And it's just, it's fluff and ridiculous, and it's so cute, and I absolutely adore it. And I'm like, this is a thing that I like.
Yeah.
I was not planning on doing this. So yeah, sometimes you just have to follow and be disciplined, but sometimes you just have to follow when something sparks some creativity.
Yeah.
Good job. You answered your own question.
I did. Yeah. How about that? Yeah. I could pay myself for my own therapy now. So
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap this up for real now.
Yeah, probably.
But Joe and CJ, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fun. So Simply to Die For, again, it's a 10-part radio murder mystery set in the 1920s. It's starting on November 4th. Is that right?
Okay. Yes.
And folks can find you where online to get that information?
Yeah. So we are on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Roving Rogue Pro. So all one word. You can also reach out to us at on our website, which is rovingroguepro.weebly.com. And I'm going to double check the email before I give it to you, because I will get it wrong. It is rovingroguepro@gmail.com. I was concerned that somebody had put productions in there. but yeah, if you search for us, our logo is a little like rogue leaning against some words that say Roving Rogue Productions. You can find us there. We'll be posting a ton of behind the scenes stuff. We also do things live and in person locally in Ohio. So if you're in Northeast Ohio, we're around. And we also have just finalized, you don't know this, we've just finalized our 2022 calendar. We have not announced it yet, but we have a bunch of things that we will be doing next year in person and virtually. So we are really, really excited. Joe has no idea what I'm talking about, but you're getting roped into some of these things also.
I absolutely figured I would be.
You're a founding actor.
I was like, just let me put it in my calendar. It's fine.
Pretty much. Yeah. You need to put the one for the Akron Museum of Art in.
Oh yeah, I do. Oh yeah, thanks.
We will be doing a 1920s murder mystery for them in person.
So. Definitely, yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on. And anything you do in the future, if you want some more advertising or whatever, just let me know. I'll get you on here. We can chat about it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And we've got a whole crew of other people. So I am one of the founding owners of Roving Rogue Productions, but we have three others who are all involved with Simply to Die For. Two of them are actors. One was our director. So they are also very fun people to talk to.
Great. Great. Well, yeah, we'll definitely be listening on November 4th and looking forward to that for sure. So
great.
All right. Thank you both for coming on. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Yep. Take care. I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. I could have talked to them for a lot longer. But again, all that information will be in the show notes about when the program will start, where you can subscribe, all that, their website, whatever I can find, I'll link down below for you. And I hope you enjoyed the video portion of this. We'll have to see how it sounds and all that, and hopefully it all comes together well. Keep listening. Coming up next week, I have a very special Halloween episode coming. I'll be talking to author Juno Jacob about Ray Bradbury and his Halloween works, as well as Juno's new Halloween book called The Halloween Book, as well as a collection of short stories he's written called The October Season. And I think these are both great books that will really put you in the mood for fall, Halloween, and all things spooky. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming next week. But anyway, that's all to come next week. So keep make sure you like and subscribe if you haven't. I've got some other book videos coming out this week and this past week. So if you want to check those out, I'd love for your following on the podcast. And so until we meet again, happy reading. Take care.